Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park, and we are up on episode number 58, ladies and gentlemen. In today's episode, I get a chance to chat to Kiva Morris. Kiva is a strength and conditioning coach and sports scientist based in Dublin. We got into some really interesting conversations, folks, in today's chat, and hope you guys enjoy the show.
Welcome back, folks. This is Coach Park, and this is the Humble Coach Podcast. We're up on episode number 58. I think it's 58. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's 58. And I'm joined today by Kiva Morris. Kiva, thanks for joining me.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. So a lot of people in the S&C world, in Ireland especially, are getting kind of more aware of your talents and experiences. So could you give us a little bit of a quick spiel on your background in coaching, and then kind of where you got to, how you got to where you're at the moment?
I don't know if I'd agree with that statement there, but
No, you'd be surprised.
Look, I'm originally from Dublin, so I did an undergrad in IT Blanchardstown in sports coaching. From there, then I went on and did a master's in UL Limerick in sports performance. I guess then I've done a few things in between. Like, I obviously worked through college and that kind of thing, and I also, for some reason, just thought it would be a good idea to do a diploma in sort of sports massage during my final year of my undergrad as well, which was a bad idea, but I thought it would be a great idea. I came out of my master's with a few different sort of avenues, a few different sort of paths of interest. So kind of went in and worked as a sports therapist for about 6 months in a clinic in Ranelagh, while also coaching. So strength and conditioning coach with a senior rugby team, the same with a couple of GAA teams. The last couple of years or so, I've kind of transitioned more so into the rugby coaching side of things rather than the strength and conditioning side, although it's still a major part of my process as a coach. At the moment, so I'm coaching with a senior cup team in Men Temple in Clontarf. I'm backs coach with the Clontarf senior women's team as well. And I've a few other positions here, there and everywhere, but those are my main coaching positions.
Cool. So, and I suppose that's one of the interesting points for all of us as coaches, is that we've all had kind of, it's rare that we won't have very checkered kind of paths to get where we're at the moment. And looking through your CV and looking through your resume and stuff like that, there's a similar enough to kind of my own. There's like lots of different clubs and lots of different types of sports and different kind of roles. And like you mentioned there, if you're the backs coach to one team and you're the main SC coach to another team, and then you're, and like you mentioned, some of the other roles and stuff like head of education and things like this, lots of interesting kind of ways to, things to be involved in. Can you talk a little bit about your current kind of situation and how you found the whole lockdown situation recently?
Yeah, look, it's been odd. As I said, a lot of my roles are coaching, so obviously, unfortunately, with lockdown, that kind of fell through. But like you said, I think, you know, in the modern era, sort of strength condition coaches or coaches, you wear a lot of hats, and I think that's what organizations are sort of looking for, that, you know, you're a strength conditioning coach on paper, but you also have a good understanding of, you know, what a sports scientist does, you have a good understanding of what the physiotherapist does. So that came in quite handy over lockdown. I had started a full-time job in a sports science role last November, which unfortunately fell through with COVID. I think I was maybe a week without work, and then somehow picked up two or three other odd jobs. So just, you know, I've a habit of making myself useful, which is a good and a bad thing, because sometimes you can take too much on, but it also, you know, it was good, so that I sort of somehow ended up doing social media consultancy and this kind of thing that have no formal training in, but, you know, made myself useful, that kind of thing. It evolved into something more. And then, at the moment, one of my main roles is with Rugby Academy Ireland. I'm the women's coordinator there. So that's, you know, a good example of a role that I'm not really, not traditionally educated in, and not something I have a huge amount of experience in, but that they were looking for someone who has experience coaching girls, which I do, and someone who has experience in strength and conditioning, because they were looking for an assistant S&C at the same time. And I was just a good person who fit both roles, and I was able to take that on. So it's good and a bad thing sometimes to wear multiple hats, I think.
Well, no, I think that's very interesting at the minute. And that's, I suppose, that we've both been involved in conversations in different groups and stuff like that regarding alternate revenue streams, or at least kind of adjusted income strategies. But I think that's one of the things that we're going to probably see a lot more of, is people like yourself who would have come from certain kind of areas, and it just either the timing or the type of activity that's now, like something like Rugby Academy Ireland, which is a really interesting kind of spot. And it's probably somewhat more common in other countries, but maybe not as much in Ireland, or even in Ireland and the UK. But it's more commonly known in Ireland as a decent kind of, like you sort of talked about, a senior cup situation, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's an extension of a senior cup kind of squad or a program. Which is very interesting, because that transitional point, especially for women at the minute, is going to be a huge, huge space to be improved on and to be worked on over the next few years. And I think that's where there is very interesting consideration for someone in your situation, like, or someone like you, or like some of us that have a number of different skills. And it's a case of, okay, well, how can we kind of work this at the right kind of timing and with the right kind of project? And have you, so I suppose a separate kind of question, but I'm sure you're probably, if you're a busy person as it is, so you probably found this even more feckin' hectic. But when we came out of that first lockdown, were you just manic straight away? Like, I know when we went back into the gym, and straight away things were crazy. Like the first month was ridiculous. Like there was no way of slowing it down. And you were like, oh Lord, I need this. We knew this is coming, but we're like, can't stop it.
Yeah, no, and I think you can do your best to plan and prepare. And I'm definitely someone who likes to have sort of, you know, I like to have my coaching plan, and I need to know where I'm going to be each week. I'm a real stickler for that, and I don't know why that is, but it's also helpful when you have multiple roles. But I definitely did try to plan for when this was actually going to sort of blow up a little bit on us. But I guess from it did and it didn't sort of go a bit crazy. It did from the Rugby Academy point of view, because as soon as we were allowed to go back and run camps and run training, we were straight on it. So that's one branch of the academy. The main focus of the academy is obviously the full-time academy. So we've players that stay there, you know, Monday to Friday, full-time, Monday to Sunday if they're international. Train for the full 8 months, go off and do a trial period in a club abroad, that kind of thing. So they are obviously still ticking away. But another branch of the academy then is running like day clinics or maybe 3 day camps. So as soon as the lockdown was lifted, we had, you know, the end of summer camps to run. We had I think maybe 8 or 12, and that's just it's not a huge amount of work. It's organizing the guest coaches to come down, making sure everyone's paid up, all that kind of admin thing that, again, I have absolutely no background in. So it was a very steep learning curve for me. But no, unfortunately, like from the point of view then of the school that I'm coaching with, we just haven't been able to get back still. Like, and it's absolutely devastating, because I know how much rugby means to the guys that are there. And they haven't been able to play. Now we've been very, you know, very proactive and made sure they got involved in a rugby club. So a lot of them are actually involved with Clontarf. So they're still ticking away, kind of thing. But you know, we had a really, really good year last year. We won 2 cups for the first time in, I think, 22 years for the school. And they really, really were dying to get back in. Like, they kept talking about doing a double. And we were dying to do that. Like, got to actually convince the school to get a strength and conditioning coach in this year as well. So we had a lot of things to look forward to, and we just haven't been able to go back. So on one aspect, you know, the things that I picked up over lockdown have carried on. And then on top of that, I've got, my coaching came back. So you know, it was definitely a lot to juggle.
Yeah. And how do you find it at the moment? Obviously, with kind of a bit more of a shutdown and stuff for the minute, it's a bit stranger. But has have you found that the alternate situation, things that you kind of picked up, would say with the education stuff and the social and things like that, has that taken over a bit now? And do you see that going even higher and higher and kind of nearly taking over the coaching a bit for in the interim, in the medium term, so to speak?
Yeah, I guess, look, over the next few months, definitely going to be a lot more sort of working from home, admin kind of thing. Because we're definitely, you know, from a rugby coaching point of view, we're shut down. Like there's nothing to go on. But again, you know, I'm definitely not someone who, once one thing stops, then I have that free time, unfortunately. Yeah. There's always something in the back pocket kind of thing that needs to be worked on. So, we had a really good month there with the academy that we launched, our 20s team. So at the moment, a women's 20s team at the moment, I'm just trying to get through the admin of all of the applications and what our trials are going to be like and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's never a down moment for me. No.
So we'll change tact a little bit. And obviously we talk about coaching now, though, because we can get into the kind of whole admin and the background stuff in a while, because that's a whole other kind of a world nearly. But have you noticed, a huge amount of difference in your coaching approach from when you kind of got started into it compared to now? And I suppose, is there certain attributes that you've developed more and more, or you found you're like, okay, look, everyone's always talked about this to me and they're like, oh yeah, well, it's going to happen eventually. But is there anything that at the moment you're kind of like, okay, look, that was so obvious at the start, but I really wasn't able to comprehend exactly how I would be in this situation with it. You talk a little bit about that maybe, and just some of the differences in where you were and where you're at kind of now.
Yeah, I guess definitely, you know, when I started out in mainly in strength conditioning, I think I was trying to be like that textbook coach, almost, that, you know, when you're in college and they go through, say, even from a coaching psychology point, that you only want to give them 3 points and let them go back in. And that's all I would do, was just, you know, 3 points. But I noticed now that it was sort of, say, for example, I was very monotone. I was very sort of strict, dull, whatever. Just give them the feedback and then let them go back in. Whereas now I think it's a journey that every coach has almost had to go on. And I see it all over Twitter as well, that I've let my own personality come into it. So, you know, I was definitely trying to be, you know, that coach that knows everything and wouldn't admit that I didn't understand or know something, or if I didn't have the answer for an athlete or a player, I'd sort of waffle my way and not let them sort of see maybe that I'm not too sure on something. But, you know, now the way I coach, I'm definitely very, very much into the whole coach-athlete relationship and how you actually foster that and build trust. And it's not just this sort of transactional business-like relationship that you have to, like, you know, if you want a player to do something on the pitch or work with a team or any, like, if they're an individual or if they're a team sport player, they have to trust you as a coach. Now, like, look, there's going to be some examples where players and athletes or coaches and athletes don't get on, but there has to be trust and respect there, and then you can leave the, you know, the personality clashes to the side, but they have to be able to look to you and trust that you know what you're doing, that you have their best interests in mind, and trust in your whole process. So definitely, I absolutely started out, you know, I didn't really want to step on anyone's toes. I kind of hung back a little bit, let other coaches take over kind of things. But yeah, the more experience you get, and again, the more experience I got in different sort of aspects of coaching, the more confident I got in sort of my own ability, my own vision, my own sort of coaching philosophy as well.
Well, I think that's very, very valid, because I think one of the most challenging pieces I see a lot of coaches these days is, well, and you've seen this as well over the years, and you're very much a rugby oriented kind of coach, I suppose, as your kind of one of your main sports, so to speak. There's obviously other sports and basketball and different things like that, but and I would have been very much the kind of CrossFitty guy these days. But like I was saying this to somebody the last day, I'm like, I had a previous life where I was very much a soccer coach and a boxing coach. And I didn't know what CrossFit was. I had no idea. And this is like a whole other life. So I had a different mentality to that. And it was very important to get that perspective so that you could actually go, okay, well, look, I'm able to change this and tweak this. Like I had the exact same thing when I was doing some of the coaching certs and stuff like that with the FAI years ago. It was very much like get in, get 30 seconds, get out, get your point across, which is fine in this kind of nice little five-a-side scenario and the whole lot. But like, I think, and this is going to bring us into the next couple of questions, because this is something that I find very interesting, is the, like you mentioned, the relationship scenario there. Most of the time as coaches, we kind of look and go, okay, well, look, the athletes are just, they just want to play. All they want to do is play, and they just want to, you know, win all the time. And for me, that's a very, very naive scenario, because they're all humans too, and they all have really interesting viewpoints on how the actual games should be played and what their role is in it, rather than just a case of, well, okay, well, I'm just another center half back, or I'm just another out half. Like, you know what I mean? They all have huge, grandiose ideas that we all have of what our role is. So I think that's quite interesting in the fact that we have a better awareness now, and you have a better awareness now of where we're at and how appropriate we need to be with the level of time or the level of patience that we would be having with individual players. But so that's where I'm going to switch. I was going to ask the next question, but I'm actually going to go on this because we're on a good form here. So so that's one of the things, I suppose, that is interesting. Have you noticed any change in the types of athletes that you have been dealing with since your kind of earlier coaching like years to now, as in, are they, even at the younger age groups or whatever it is, are they more educated? Are they more aware? Or do they want to know more about the actual coaching process or the actual learning process? Or how have you found that?
Yeah, I'd almost deal with that sort of in a male sense and then a female sense. So from my experience working in girls rugby, there's been a massive shift. So I think if you talk to a lot of coaches, they'll kind of agree to say that, you know, if you're coaching guys and you give them an instruction, they'll go off and do it. But if you're coaching girls or women, give them an instruction, they'll ask you questions about it and try to understand why it's important before they go off and do it. I found a huge shift in sort of underage girls rugby, so kind of under 12, 14, 16s. When I first started out, now it's only 4 years ago, but when I first started out, they were almost sort of, I guess, embarrassed to say they played rugby, or, you know, they didn't want to admit it to their friends, kind of thing. And we know from research that if it's a sport that's typically seen as masculine, it can be a major issue and lead to a lot of dropout in girls in those sort of masculine sports. No one can see my inverted commas, but I'm doing air quotes there. But like that sort of, you know, that's that kind of embarrassment of girls of admitting that they're playing rugby. And there's a huge shift since the 20 by 20 campaign has gone on. And again, you can't just solely put it down to one thing. But the biggest shift that I've seen is girls going from believing that it's a masculine sport to seeing that it is also a feminine sport. That if you're comfortable being masculine in that environment, that's okay. And if you're comfortable being feminine in that environment, that's okay. And if you're comfortable being neither, that's okay. That it accepts all types of people, all, you know, and it's not just a boys' sport. And a great example is one of the kids that I used to coach in my old club in Railway. One time, I think she was saying that she was hanging out with her friends or something one time, group of guys and group of girls. And they were just, the guys were talking about how they play rugby, and she mentioned she played rugby, and they stupidly said, "Oh, go on, prove it. She is probably the best tackler I have ever seen, like, and ever coached myself." So the minute she said, "Oh, they asked me to prove it," I just went, "Oh no, what did you do?" And like creamed them. So like, but she was so proud to be able to do that and delighted that she had that skill and that she was strong and powerful and that kind of thing. So there's been a huge shift in mentality from a women's point of view, definitely. And I would say, you know, we would hope that it starts to replicate what's going on in boys and men's rugby. Again, as I said, coaching a senior cup team in a school, and I mean, some of the most intelligent rugby players I've coached ever. Like, they just know and live the game inside out. And totally agree with what you're saying there, that a lot of them have opinions on how things should be run or what they would like to do. And I'm a big person in that whole, you know, player autonomy thing, that I definitely, you know, I have a vision myself and say how our attacking structure might be, but everything else they come up with. And, you know, we have a very good scrum half who I probably three times a week will come up, and he's seen this clip from like 1970 of this random little play off the back of a scrum, and asks, can we do it in training, or can we see if it works in our next match? Yeah, 100%, absolutely. Like, if that makes you excited to play the game, it might make others excited to play the game. Absolutely run with it, because we're here for enjoyment as well. As, and I know you've mentioned obviously that, you know, players are here for the competitiveness. We also know that some are just there for the fun and some are there for a mix. So I think that mix is huge, that we don't just want. And I think that's also actually another good point on why I think women's rugby has changed a little bit, that, you know, in the past, maybe girls training sessions have just been fun, and you're then losing the girls that want to be there for the competitiveness of it. Yeah. So that has shifted now, which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. But having that balance is really important. It's something I always try to hit, because I think, you know, no matter how difficult the session was, I would hope that every player gets off the pitch and says that they did enjoy it in some way. Like, even if it was pouring rain and we just went after something that we're poor at on the match, it was really difficult and it was really hard, but they got it in the end, that they walk off the pitch and they said, you know what, actually that was enjoyable. So that's probably what I look for.
I think that's pretty interesting, because the, a lot of different thoughts going through my head there with regards the different kind of parts to that answer. And I suppose the first one would be, I think a huge amount of it comes down to the type, like you mentioned, 2020 is a huge, huge piece to it. And like, even still, that has only really, I think, began. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, that could get crazy over the next few years. And I think it will easily, like, and with that, that's going to filter in now to everything. Even, I think it's even just the fact that there might be some, like, even with the whole Irish women's soccer team, like, even any bit of controversy adds to the fuel. Adds fuel to the whole conversation. I think that's one of the biggest things, is just the conversation about all of these equality situations that we might be encountering, and different kind of challenges when it comes to that. But I think when it comes back to the basic part is the type of sports that we're dealing with. So, and I'll use CrossFit as a bit of an example as well. So CrossFit's a relatively gender kind of, I suppose, neutral type of an activity, a sport. Mainly because it can be adjusted to a certain level of weight adjustment or things like that. But at the highest level, it's not a big issue, because there's a huge, like, there's not massive discrepancies potentially between different abilities. It's like, there's a respect and awareness of certain levels of different abilities, fine, but or different levels of strength or speed or whatever it is. But I think that's becoming more and more acceptable or accepted in different sports, in different both female and male sports. Like, so the common complaint is that women's, like, we'd say women's rugby or women's soccer is much slower. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit, because when you watch the sport, you're like, what are you comparing it to? Are you comparing it to, like, you're only comparing the actual teams that are playing. Like, you can't compare it against, well, this other team here, play this other team and see how the speed reacts and how the level of skill is, because I don't buy the fact that it's a lot less boring, it's a lot more boring, or it's a lot more sedate or whatever it is. I don't buy that, because when you look at, I've seen so many different men's games or so many different women's games that are just terrible, or they're amazing and they just have in their own merits, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why I think it becomes more and more interesting for us as coaches about the, how do we say it? The approach to the sport, and the respect for the particular sport. So, like, there's hugely fantastic players, both male and female, in rugby in Ireland. And there just needs to be more talk about all of them, not just certain few or such. Like, and it's the reason, the majority of the time, the reason why, and the why the 2020 works is if you're not seen, like you can't actually get all of this extra awareness among younger people or older people or whatever it is. And even the way you talked about some of the little tricks and things like this, I think it's funny. I'm getting into like sports trading cards these days. Okay. In the last maybe year or so.
Yeah.
And that's usually about nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching Maradona videos at the moment and I'm watching different things going on. And I'm like, this is class. And I'm looking at like the coach's playbook, and I'm looking at like the women's soccer team and stuff like this. And for me, a huge amount of that comes down to us fueling the bit of nostalgia and those really, really phenomenal plays from whatever era it was and bringing them back because they're really, really interesting, kind of fun ones. And I think when we get athletes, men, guys or girls that are interested in that, they're huge, huge helps to the interest level in the games. But I think that's one of the big things is I'm going a bit off topic now, so I'll come back.
No, but that's very true. Cause I think I think a massive thing, as you're saying, is that interest. I think that's what 2020 has done quite well, is that it's important to have interest in women's sport, not just from women, but also from men. And I think that's what's happening now. And I'm not too sure what the figures were. I know that they released them last week or the week before, that the percentage of men that are now watching women's sport is increased, which is excellent. And I know, like in a rugby setting, I mean, we owe so much to dads and fathers in rugby. And I've spoken to so many coaches who, you know, their daughter was playing minis rugby, you know, where they're mixed with boys and girls. And then they wanted to start playing under 12s, but the club just didn't have a team. So they set one up, which is like, that's what we're looking for. And it's that level of interest and that kind of across the board that, you know, like women's rugby and men's rugby are different. They are different games. There's different things that happen in them. We know that there's a lot more sort of ball in hand. There's a lot more rocks, a lot more tackles and that kind of thing in women's rugby compared to men's, but it doesn't mean it's less interesting. Like, and it depends on, and I would absolutely agree that it annoys me when people sort of say, oh, it's a much slower game or what, this kind of thing. Like, yes, technically on paper, they may be going slower than your international men's player. And this is a conversation that I've had recently, that you also have to look at, you know, what has that person's journey been in professional sport? And we know that rugby, women's rugby was anyway, it's changing now, but it was typically a much older population. So you'd have people, and me myself picking up at 19, 20, 21, compared to a boy who started at 4 and then they may have gone through a good club. Maybe they went to a typical rugby school. They had a strength and conditioning coach. They had sports scientists. They had performance analysts. Then maybe they got set up in an academy where they had everything. And then into, you know, A teams, provincial teams, before getting on to that international team. So they've had a whole life of, you know, strength and conditioning and that kind of thing, you know, to allow them to sprint that quickly on an Ireland versus England game, compared to a women's player who may have picked it up when they were 19, you know, kind of did their own gym bits themselves. Very few clubs in Ireland would have a strength and conditioning coach. And then maybe they got on an interprovincial team, so they got a little bit of help. And then it's only when they sort of get into a national stage that they actually start to get that help. So I think it does annoy me, because you're not comparing like with like. Hopefully in a few years' time, it will be like with like, because look, we're having a lot more girls now who have been playing since they were 4 and have an interest and have the resources to get into the gym and get trained correctly in the gym and develop their power and speed and strength. But at the moment, we're not there, but we're getting there. So I totally agree. It annoys me when that comparison is made.
Well, that's a good point, because, and I think this is probably one of the biggest things, and this is one of the main reasons that the likes of 2020 is a very interesting concept to kind of push. And I suppose it's a very helpful one, because when it comes towards, we'll say with the, like you mentioned there, the actual level of experience that you would have, that a player would have had, a young female player would have had, an exposure to so many different types of coaches across the journey. That's where I think some of the really interesting stuff is going on at the moment with the likes of the AFL, or the constant kind of transition back and forth between women's GAA and the AFL and things like that, and then crossing over, like you mentioned, even into, like we were talking about, into basketball, into rugby, going back over towards some levels of soccer and stuff like that, or even camogie. Like, there's that mixture, which at the moment is maybe not massive, but will definitely build over time and will naturally filter into more opportunities available. So something like the Sevens, for example, is a really interesting one, because that would have been an outlet in the last few years for certain players who were like, okay, well, look, I'm not going to maybe be able to commit fully to this, but I can have, I have some skills in this particular sport. I can transfer them over here. And this is why I suppose my next kind of question is, so you're involved in rugby at the moment, you're involved in basketball, and how many other sports are you involved in?
A little bit in athletics, and I have been involved with GAA, but just not at the moment. Okay.
So where do you find, so of those sports, where do you think is the most transferable skills into the alternates?
Oh, that's tough now.
I was thinking about this earlier on. I was like,
I think actually, and I know you're not on Twitter, but I think that there was a similar question asked there during the week of if you could only work on one of, I think it was strength, speed, and power.
I think I saw that, all right, yeah.
Which would you choose? And it's a very difficult question, I think, because I think from, you're not just looking at it from a physiological point of view, there's also the psychological, the tactical, the technical kind of point of view. But I think if I had to choose anything, it's that, I would say that kind of idea that they're coachable almost. And I know it's not really a physiological answer, but I find that you could have the most talented player in the world, but if they cannot take on feedback, if they can't, you know, respond well to, you know, criticism, positive reinforcement, that kind of thing, they could be the quickest person, the strongest person, you know, they know the game inside out, but if they can't be coached, like, it's an impossible task to take on. And I have only had really one or two people like that, and obviously you have your different interventions and have a bit of a heart to heart and try to see what's going on with them. Is there maybe something going on at home, kind of thing? Sometimes you just have people who just aren't wired that way, or maybe in that instance, in that time in their life, they're just not in a position to be able to be coached or, you know, to respond that kind of way to what you're trying to do. But I think from a psychological point of view, it's definitely that ability to be coached. But I think if I was to pick anything physiologically, to be honest, I would probably say speed. I think maybe it's sort of indicative of the kind of rugby I like. I kind of term it chaotic rugby, that, you know, we have an idea of a plan of how we want to attack, but anything could happen, because, you know, it's the kind of thing that I like to coach is, you know, we have a plan, we have a setup, but play what's in front of you. So we may have a call made, but by the time you at center have received the ball, you see something else in front of you to just go for, kind of thing. So I think speed for me is probably a big thing. Like your ability to react to something almost is would probably be the one thing I would choose. Yeah, that's a tough question though.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was thinking about this a few different times in the last maybe few months, and just with seeing so many different sports crossing over into other ones, and especially going back to the women's kind of, I suppose the concept of it's a slower game, and like you mentioned there, there's a lot more rucks, there's a lot more tackles, there's a lot more things like this, and there's probably a couple of reasons for that. One of the main reasons obviously is, like you mentioned, the exposure to the actual strength work and speed work and general conditioning and physiological adjustments and advances to be at a particular level of speed and stuff like that within a certain game. But I think when it comes down to the, like, it's definitely changing in the last few years, because like you mentioned, there's a lot more younger players now who are way more physically able to do all of these things, to have a lot more speed available to them, to have a lot more perceptive abilities. But I think that's one of the, like, the athletics is an interesting one. The speed of thought for me is a huge, huge part. But it's also, I think, even like all of the best players that we kind of all like and appreciate, I think, are spectacular readers of the game. And regardless of whether they're wingers or they're out halves or they're front rowers or whatever it is, or they're actual sprinters or whatever it is. Like, I'm thinking of something like, if you're a 100-meter sprinter or a 60-meter sprinter, like, the amount of detailed refinement of technique you're going to need and the coachability you're going to need to be perceptive to is huge, like, because you're looking for minute details. You know what I mean? I think that's one of the difficulties with sometimes the team sports is because there's less of an emphasis on the individualization of progressive skill elements or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's where something like the Rugby Academy is really interesting, because you can dig in quite a bit and you're preparing them for these very, very high profile types of trials or teams and stuff, which is, I think, is, could you see something like that coming up a lot more for GA or for even for basketball and things like that over the next few years?
Yeah, I guess what's good about the academy is that we kind of provide that academy structure that, mm-hmm. that doesn't exist at the moment in women's rugby. We know that boys, you know, coming up through school or coming up through that underage club system, they can get in with the Leinster under 16, Metro, Northeast, whatever. Like, there's four or five different academy settings that they can get involved mm-hmm. in. It's not there at the moment for the girls. So mm-hmm. it is great to see, like, we get girls coming down. I think we have about 8 girls that come down on a Friday who are all in mm-hmm. transition year. And we just get to spend, say, 8 hours on tackle technique or evasion or kicking skills that, you know, they wouldn't be able to get that in a club setting. Again, because it's 2 training sessions a week and a match on the weekend. Coaches have 30, 35 people in a squad to worry about that. You know, you're going in, you're getting your basics, letting them learn and develop on the pitch kind of thing. But it's great to see girls come down and be able to get into the minute details of these really technical skills, because that's what boys are getting in their academy systems in underage, and that's what the girls aren't getting at the moment. But yeah, I think, like, from a basketball point of view, I'm only quite new to it, but it's a very good setup. They've got excellent strength and conditioning coaches involved, and the head of athletic development there is Peter Madsen. I think Kevin Foley is alongside him, and they've done brilliant things in recent years for basketball. And it's something that I would love other sports to take up. And I know it's not as transferable, but the fact that there's under 16 men and women's, there's under 18s men, under 17s actually, men's and women's, 18s, 19s, 20s before you get up to a senior squad. So there is that development pathway, which again, we have it in GAA as well, which is great. And I just can't wait for it to come into rugby, because it's going to make a massive difference that there's, you know, there, basketball, obviously it's easier to have those national representative sides, and that they have competitions to go to and they get international experience. From a GAA point of view, they have what's their equivalent, which is the county representative sides. And it'd just be great to get that going in rugby as well, from a provincial representative side point of view. And as well, it was great to see last year that there was an Irish women's under 18s team that went away for a test game. And we were lucky enough to have a good few of them apply to attend our 20s trial in December. But, you know, that's invaluable experience that they now have. International experience, they have the ability to come in to a squad of people that they probably don't know and be able to work with them. And it's great to have, we have Alison Miller, who's former Irish international winger, so she's involved with the team. She's the backs coach, and she's spoken a few times about the importance of a player being able to come in as a new player into a squad of people that they don't know and be able to still do their job, still get on with everyone. So I think that's a massive thing that luckily they're able to get in GAA, they're able to get that in basketball as well. And it will be great to see it when it comes into rugby as well.
I think that's actually, So the whole concept of even like those day camps you were talking about there, like they're, for me, they're a huge, huge potential gold mines of progress. Like it's in, cause you're not going to like a lot of, especially obviously with the current situation, like it's a bit weird at the minute, obviously, because you can't have like, obviously our outdoor coaching and stuff like this is kind of a bit strange and it's not really available an awful lot at the moment, but the potential for even for certain teams, if you like, you spend 6 to 8 hours working on a particular number of skills, like the amount of progress you can make is obscene. Like, yeah. And then the amount of takeaways that they can have from that is unbelievable. Like, so then the progress is exponential from that, because you'll be able to just go, okay, look, we can work on this in the next couple of months, work on this the next couple of months, and so on. And like you said, it's the building blocks for all of those different pieces. Like they look like the likes of that under-18s international, like that's a huge one for some of those players. It's unbelievably massive, yeah. But it's a vital step, even if it is only a small step maybe, but it's a vital step to keep adding in and building on and building on all the time, because otherwise it's going to be very difficult to do that. But I think there's enough momentum there at the moment for that to really roll on very, very well. I think the hard part really is just the it's getting the buy-in and like you mentioned about the GA as well, it's kind of nearly there's an international element to rugby into basketball. It's almost like that there's too much of a gap, but there's a very big gap between like the normal club scenario and then there. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas in the GAA, that's compressed because it's just closer to home rather than too far away. But I think that's where sometimes rugby is an interesting one. Sometimes the men's senior team looks quite far away, be it financially, be it all of this kind of stuff, you know, just even promotionally and all that, it looks significantly different. But I think with the women's, even the whole jersey situation recently with the women's team, I have to say, I quite like that. I'm like, you know what? Fucking screw them. Like, it's what that needs to be done. Like, you know,
it's a simple thing,
but it makes a huge difference when there's a certain level of respect given to whatever sport you're playing. I think it's, again, it has to be irregardless of what sport you're playing. There's a, if you're playing, you're playing. It just depends. It's a bit of a different game you're kind of at, you know. Now I'm going to change tact a little before I let you go. So I'm quite interested in the, I know you're working with Dealey Sports Science at the moment. Also, that's one of your other hats. How's that going? And is there anything in particular that has surprised you about getting into that kind of area in the last while?
Yeah, no, I guess I, again, sort of took that on around the start of lockdown 1.0 in March. And again, obviously, Kieran Dealey is the guy who runs that. And he was lovely. He got in touch with me when I had lost that original sports science job, just to say, look, if you want to do any kind of blogs or anything like that, to feel free. And that's somehow how I landed in like organizing social media that, again, have absolutely no experience in. So it's cool. So I guess I got feedback like 3 years ago on my CV. Now this is a complete weird tangent, but it all lies in. Got feedback on my CV that it was sort of very, you know, it was just paragraph. It was very kind of boring to look at. And I got advice to sort of how to make it stand out more and make more of a visual CV so that it sticks out of the pile. So I kind of got into, you know, that kind of, I won't call it graphic design because it's not graphic design, but it's the best way I can describe it. But those skills had just then transferred over. So Kieran was in need of sort of podcast posters, kind of webinar posters, that kind of thing. And I was able to do that. So that just kind of took off. It's a great resource. He's mainly looking at sort of GAA and strength conditioning at the moment. But I mean, if you're a GAA coach, my God, you should be signing up, because it's just having a look at the amount of skills, drills, games, resources there is on his site is insane. And we're hopefully going to grow into rugby now as soon as I can get back on the ground and start videoing some games and drills. But No, it's brilliant. So like, I think mainly I'm looking after social media, helping to organize and facilitate kind of webinars and that kind of thing. And then writing blogs every couple of weeks with the other sports scientist, Ben Smalley. So no, it's an excellent place to be involved in.
I know, it's phenomenal space, like, to be fair. That's quite interesting. I think that's another string to the bow. And I think that's one thing that we'll see an awful lot more of is, and I need to work on this myself, but even when, I think it was Rob Pacey in one of the podcasts recently, and he was like, okay, what's the most appropriate skill to have? And it's like, well, data visualization. And you're kind of like, okay, well, that's exactly it. Because, and maybe not necessarily for sports science scientists, but like Instagram, if you're any kind of a dodgy personal trainer or anything like that on Instagram at the moment, you're already a legend at that. Like, because you're just adding in lots of interesting little graphics here and there, which is, I think, is ideal, because like you mentioned, it does make a huge difference to the consumption of those things and the perception of those types of areas. But I think that's one thing that we can all improve on as coaches is, and I look at Nick Winkelmann and stuff like that, even with the language of coaching and that kind of stuff is very, very interesting, because the more and more colorful you can make it, the more easily and readily available it is for us to choose and then to adjust for our own needs as such. Like, it's funny looking at some of the examples that he had in that book, and I'm like, okay, well, I've already used those examples loads of times. What the hell, you know? So that makes a big difference to it. But then trying to put that on paper, put that on screen is quite a challenge. But I think it is a very important piece to add into it. I think that it just makes it a bit more, it confirms in our minds some of the areas that we really will be working on strongly, because the actual younger people are going to be, or the younger athletes, etc., are going to be able to take it on more readily. Like, I think that's where, going back to the very start of the conversation, like, if we're constantly having quick conversations with them, then we need some relatively quick graphic situations for them to really understand it, you know, rather than just one avenue of understanding. So have you any particular plans or anything like that you're working on in the next while, any more projects, or have you got enough on your plate at the minute?
Yeah, no, I guess, you know, with the nature of strength and conditioning and sports coaching, you know, as I've said, I've a few different hats to wear, and I would ideally love to only be wearing one hat and then do things on the side kind of thing. So I guess, look, personally, the stuff with the academy is going really, really good. We've got we have our under-20s trial for the women's team coming up start of December, and then at the end of the season, so kind of end of May, start of June, we'll be going across to England. To the plan was to just play one team, but we're after getting, I think, almost 100 applications, and we'll try to see that the whole idea behind the academy is to help sort of foster development, foster talent. And if we're going to stay true to that, really, we should be looking to keep as many people as we can involved. So sort of the logistics end of trying to get 80 people over to England is a completely different story, but we'll kind of see how the trials go, and hopefully maybe go over for maybe a week and play a couple of games. But I guess I'm gonna have to see how this kind of next year or so goes for me. I've kind of been four years at strength and conditioning at the moment, and you know, there's always the option of going abroad. There's maybe the option of changing tact. I'm also very interested in that kind of sports therapy or physiotherapy kind of thing. So I guess, shockingly to my 12-year-old self, I'm very interested in academics. I would never have thought that. So look, there's always a PhD on the horizon as well, but I guess see how COVID goes first and then I'll make a decision.
No, of course. Yeah, I think that's quite interesting, that as in just the natural progression is using your coaching knowledge and then bringing it into the academia and just really making sense of the whole thing.
I guess it's a big help. I guess that I think I said when I started out, I only kind of wanted to work strength and conditioning in elite performance kind of settings, but that has completely changed now, because I find it so interesting working with teenagers with young kids, like very special interest in sort of the development of the women's game as well. So something that I'd definitely like to look into a bit more, whether it's the PhD route or just looking to actually get a bit of full-time employment and that kind of thing. But yeah, just see how the next couple of years go anyway, and see what decision I can make.
Cool, nice. So Kiva, where can somebody get in touch with you if they want to catch up with you? Obviously Dealey Sports Science is a phenomenal spot to kind of check out, and Rugby Academy Ireland. But have you anything? Obviously there's some new webinars coming up I think soon enough on Dealey Sports Science.
Yeah. We have sort of a four-part series coming up with Stephen Poacher, there's Ryan Devlin, David Power, and Ryan McLaughlin as well. Yeah. So who are all a coach up with Down GAA, that's Stephen Poacher. Then Ryan is a sports scientist, strength and conditioning coach with Sheffield Wednesday. David is a physiotherapist with Leicester Tigers. And then Ryan is, I don't think he likes the word strength and conditioning coach. I think he has sports science kind of along those lines with Donegal. Okay. So they're all on every, I think it's every Monday for the next 4 weeks or so, for DSS members that study. But for me, obviously, love a bit of Twitter. So I'm Coach Kiva on Twitter and the same on Instagram. But yeah, through Daily Sports Science or the Academy as well.
Cool. Okay. Well, that's awesome. I think that was a very interesting insight into Coach Kiva. I know we've chatted plenty before in different kind of contexts and stuff, but I think it is it's always very helpful to get an awareness of where people's journey and then their kind of thoughts on what way they like to coach and what way they like to kind of work things. So massive appreciation for you joining me today, Kiva. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 58 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Kiva Morris. First of all, everybody, I want to say a massive thank you to Kiva for joining me on the show today and taking time out of our busy schedule. So thank you very much, Kiva. Second of all, folks, I want to say a massive thank you to you all for the continued support of the podcast over the last number of years. And I'm really looking forward to over the next few weeks and months, bringing a lot more really interesting guests on the show. If you'd like to check out any of the back catalogue of the Humble Coach Podcast, any of our previous shows, you can find us on Podbean, on iTunes, on Spotify, and pretty much wherever else you would get your podcast from, we should be there. So I'm going to leave you guys to it. Again, a massive thank you very much for joining us on the show today. And have a fantastic day, folks. Stay safe, and we'll see you soon.